There are a whole series of levels to this. First, just on a human level, it's wonderful that families, after a long period of time, will be able to get people back together. Of course, we're generations into this now, so in some respects, this is people going back to visit their roots. The transfer of money will be interesting because that will certainly change the Cuban economy in the same way that Mexico has, to some extent, become dependent on remittances. I think you're going to see very quickly cash flow from the United States into those families become a significant event. Beyond that, of course, you've got the issue of how will this change the political dynamic. I guess my one concern about all of this is that almost alone in the world, Cuba remains unrepentant in its embrace of communism. And the reluctance all along has been, will we be endorsing that or actually supporting such government? In this regard, it's important to watch two things. One is their rhetoric. Of course, the Chinese have not turned loose of communism. They've just recognized that a new day has dawned, and they've tried to keep their political system while changing the economic system. And if that happens, then eventually Cuba will have no choice. Economic pressures will push it in our direction. But the other issue, of course, is countries like Venezuela, who might take this as a sort of an inspiration, a departure point, a validation of their socialist view of the world. And so it's just there is a minefield here. We're going to have to tread carefully.
Yeah, I think that the Obama administration has been trying to tiptoe delicately or correctly through a lot of these different kinds of minefields on several different fronts. I wonder, though, maybe the model is the relationship we had with the Soviet Union when we established the concept of detente, because they weren't going away, we weren't going away, and so why should we have beyond DEFCON 5, if you will, pointed at each other all the time. And eventually that led to huge change. So maybe that's the administration's thinking now with Cuba, do you suppose?
I think that's probably true. It certainly fits a pattern with this administration around the world of saying let's open, actually return in some respects to the philosophy in the Clinton administration. Let's embrace engagement, with the assumption is that if we engage with people, that economic and democratic pressures will simply push them in the direction of enlarging democracy and free market. They don't have any choice. Essentially, history is on our side. Of course, dictator regimes and strong central regimes tend to resist that strongly. I'm not sure exactly how that'll play out, but in the long run, I do think history is probably on our side as this relationship opens up. There is, of course, the question of security, and that's one we need to consider.
Now, when people travel between the United States and Cuba, will they need a visa to leave the country and to enter Cuba, or do we know what kind of restriction will be placed on that?
I don't think that's clear yet. There's been early discussion, but I don't think that's at all clear. There will be arguments, certainly, for some sort of a special relationship. However, that would run counter to the direction that we've actually been moving over the last several years, which is to insist on strong documentation moving back and forth. An American has to have a passport to get back into the country now, no matter where you visit. And so I'm not sure what they will do with documentation. However, the issue of security is a very important one. Cuba has had one of the best security services, intelligence services in the world. They have penetrated us. They have monitored us. They've been very good at this. And so certainly I hope that all of our intelligence agencies would be on tiptoe as the door opens.
Yeah, because charter flights are going to be going back and forth. And unless that's, kept in place, it seems to me you run the risk of having people come back that you might not want here.
Well, there are a number of risks. One of them is that family members that visit are without doubt going to be approached. I'd be astonished if the Cuban intelligence agency didn't approach them. And they, in this day and age, don't necessarily have to be heavy-handed. They can just make it clear that life for relatives will be much easier and much better if folks in the United States cooperate. I'd be astonished if that didn't come to pass. And the reason I'd be so surprised is because I'd be equally surprised if the same thing didn't happen on this end. I mean, that's just the way intelligence works. We recently did several very interesting interviews with folks who had spent a career in our own intelligence agency, who essentially made the point that every embassy in the world, ours, theirs, allies, every industry in the embassy in the world is also in the business of espionage, and so that will be an active part of this relationship.
We're talking this morning to Dave McIntyre, co-host of Homeland Security Inside and Out, which will air Tuesdays at noon on Federal News Radio, and he's also director of the Integrative Center for Homeland Security at Texas A&M.
And Dave, there's another small side dynamic going on down there in Cuba, and that is that you have Fidel and you have Raul. And Raul is ostensibly in charge, but when the congressional delegation from the Congressional Black Caucus went down, they met with both of them. Is there any air between the two of them in terms of policy, do you think?
I'm not sure we'll see a great deal of difference between those two. I think you raise a great issue, which is behind that. I mean, Raul himself is a little long in the tooth. So what happens next? Always the question with any strong central government, a traditional dictator, always the central issue is the transition of power. And so who will that go to? A committee? A group? How are they formed? Will the intelligence agency emerge, as happened in Russia? Yeah, democratized, yes, to some extent. But who doesn't believe that the former KGB really runs the show now in at the upper levels of Russia? So who will emerge as the power? Now, one good aspect of opening the door is we'll get a little better vision of this by actually having some people on the ground.
Yeah, so we'll have a listening post of our own, so to speak.
We'll have listening posts. We'll have people that are able to pick up rumors. We'll have people that can move easily among the populace. And so, I mean, this is a healthy thing, this sort of intelligence collection that's different from the kind of type of hostile intelligence that seeks to turn people against their own country. And this also, I want to come back to the issue of I'll be very interested in seeing how this plays out with Venezuela. It seems to me the real issue south of us, the real political issue is not the future of Cuba. The family regime has run its course, and so we're going to see play out a very interesting issue, but not one that's going to change our history. What's happening in Venezuela is an entirely different issue. Here we have a social dynamic, a social force at work that is trying actively to spread to other nations south of our border, that's trying to actively influence and is declared to be hostile. There is a relationship between Cuba and Venezuela. It'd be interesting to see how that plays out. Do we improve? Do we get a better window in Venezuela? Do we not?
And what would your idea be about how the United States then goes further and just increases the amount of travel between the two countries, you know, on a broader level? Do you think that this will be allowed to go forward for a while before that happens, or do you think that will happen more quickly?
I think there's going to be a real tension here between how much we can shape the relationship and how much events sort of are in the saddle and begin to drive us. The hope is that we could have the strong hand and shape the relationship, open it at a reliable pace, get some concessions on human rights and transparency and openness, at the same time that we provide some commensurate concessions in the other direction of opening the economy. In other words, that we could sort of be in control of the opening situation as we move towards some really hard questions. Let me tell you, there is a big question coming up. Who owns the property on the ground in Cuba? People who fled and their property was seized, or the people who now have had it for two generations. So
will those questions be answered first before you see broader travel policies?
Really interesting question, and I don't think anybody knows. Will we be able to move at some deliberate speed with the State Department in charge of negotiations toward a careful step forward? Or will events take control? Will something happen we hadn't anticipated? A family goes down and refuses to leave because they've occupied their territory. They go back to take their property back. Some events that we can't, or a flood of people move more than we had anticipated, or we have some child issue that arises, like Gonzalez's case several years ago. I mean, this is one of those things that life is uncertain, and we can't tell whether we're going to be able to control this through the State Department, through measured diplomacy, which I hope, or whether events will simply take charge and lead us in a direction that we can't anticipate.